Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Rich, big fans, but we don't do intros. We'll exchange hugs and kisses later, I promise. We have a 12-team Superflex PPR 1.75 tight end premium start 10. Are you going Ayuk and Goddard or Kyle Pitts in a projected late 25 first? Go ahead, Rich.
I'm taking the Kyle Pitts side. I'm looking at Brandon Ayuk, and, you know, Brandon Ayuk is, you know, in the news, obviously, because he's trying to get paid. And I like Brandon Ayuk a lot. I like him a lot as a player, but obviously a lot of his efficiency is manipulated by he plays in a lot of an offense that basically runs like two wide receiver sets, like, you know, that boosts all those yards per hour and all those metrics everyone loves to talk about. Sure. And what really throws me off, though, here is that Dallas Goedert, like, is just not doing anything for me, like, for at any level of fantasy football. I mean, you look at the last 2 years, I mean, look at how many premium finishes this guy has. Like, he's just not winning weeks for you, not even in a format like that. And I get, you know, everyone saying, you know, Kyle Pitts, you know, probably done with him, washing their hands. Dude, Kyle Pitts already has 1,000 yard season. Travis Kelce hadn't caught a pass in the NFL before he was the age of Kyle Pitts is right now. You know, Travis Kelce caught his first pass in the NFL, I think, a month before he turned 25 years old. Didn't have his first tight end one season until he was 27. So, like, there's a ton of meat on the bone left for Kyle Pitts. You don't have to even believe everything that you're hearing from Raheem Morris right now that they're going to involve him in the offense. There's just so much more left on the table for Kyle Pitts. And I'm not even going to get into any excuse-making for injuries, Arthur Smith quarterback play. I just still want Kyle Pitts. He's going to hold that value, too, for trading, even if he's not producing. He still has it right now, 3 years later.
He's still liquid, no doubt about it. Scott, what are you thinking about this?
Yeah, I think Pitts over Ayuk. You would take a first for Goddard, so just one for one if you take each piece for one of the other pieces. I think it's pretty clear. I'm a little concerned about Pitts. I think he's being a little bit overhyped in terms of the offense is just going to make him magical back to what he was, plus having a good quarterback. But I agree with Rich that he may never become Travis Kelce. That's a high bar to get to. But it feels like if he's just A, healthy and has an efficient quarterback, he's going to stick in that tight end 4 to 8 range for a while. He's too good. He's too efficient. Like, he's not going to fall below that to the point where it's like we're wondering why he had a 600-yard season. Unless it's just injuries zap him again. I mean, it's possible that that happens to anybody. But I think he's actually a fairly safe asset because I agree, Rich. There's probably the chance that he puts up 70 and 900 next year and we call him a disappointment, but guess what? Then he's going to be 24 and you're going to go, well, maybe he can do it again and get a little bit yeah. better. So I think he does have security that we're not talking about. And I think it's a little bit of a misnomer. People thinking, oh yeah, he's just going to become the tight end one. Cause he has Kirk Cousins. Like there's a lot of unknowns still. I think there's questions about how that system is going to use him. We feel, oh, it's just going to be a slam dunk. He's just like a receiver out there. Like that's not exactly how it works. Especially if they draft a receiver, which we'll talk about receivers later. But
to this point in his career, Kyle Pitts' greatest, you know, gift has been his largest weakness from, you know, deployment in the NFL, you know, and obviously it was with Arthur Smith, but, you know, Arthur Smith wanted to split him out regularly and give him nothing but low efficient targets from obviously it was paired with a low efficient quarterback, but we still need in this offense. Even though we're getting upgraded Kirk Cousins, we still need him to get some freebies, right? Like we need him to get used on that shallow intermediate level. And we haven't had that so far in the NFL in his career to this point.
I will say we did a shout out to Ray. We did a film room for an hour and a half watching the Rams offense, which is going to be similar to Zach Robinson running it with the Falcons. And there are certain games, certain matchups where it is just, as long as you're going to use him in the same role that they use Tyler Higbee or even Davis Allen, there are games where it's just there's six or seven easy ones to either the running back or the tight end. Just the way that the game is flowing. Hopefully Kyle Pitts gets that, and it's not some of the other tight ends that they end up having on the roster. That's going to be huge in terms of whether he has 90 catches or whether he has 65. But Shane, what do you think? I assume you're with us on this.
Yeah, where are you at? I'm just going to recap it real quick for those listening. So it's our usual 12-team PPR, start 10, super flex, of course. Ayuk and Goddard or Kyle Pitts in a late 25 first, Shane?
Yeah, I mean, for everything they said, obviously I want to go with the Pitts side. Although I do disagree with Scott that he'll still hold value if he doesn't come out and smash next year. If he's another wide receiver 7 or 8 season, he's going to be thought of as Dallas Goddard, even though he is only 24. You know how we act in Dynasty. I mean, we've already given this guy a lot of leeway. We've gave him his rookie year when he couldn't score a touchdown. Then, you know, he hasn't done anything we want since, right? So, but we're still giving him that leeway. But again, us, how it works in Dynasty is one more, not even mediocre, but one more season where he doesn't match expectations, he's probably going to drop in value.
Well, flip that to like even like Brock Bowers. I think it's just people how treat the tight end position in general. It's not even Kyle Pitts' fault. It's that a lot of people want to chase that unicorn, that leverage, right? That onesie position. I want to have a player that provides maximum leverage versus the field when that's just such a tight, needle to thread, you know, to saying I'm going to get a guy that just has a 7-year run like Travis Kelce, right? Like, and have this guy that's just an apex hammer. But like a lot of these tight ends, like just don't match the value of even like the wide receiver twos, the wide receiver threes. And I think that's what it comes down to. Even the Pitts, like the expectations for a position, him just tilting you're like winning you leagues as a one position player at a position that inherently doesn't score a lot of fantasy points, probably never his fault either. And we're probably going to do the same thing with Brock Bowers, who, you know, as a guy who doesn't have, you know, quite that downfield ability yet displayed in college that Pitts even had at Florida.
So let's do this. We're going to cover a hammer. So Rich, this is how we do our super chats. We have awesome donators, supporters, if you will, who buy us coffees. We call them hammers. We're going to break down this trade. Rich will go first again. And then, we're going to get into this wide receiver saturation topic that Scott had me intrigued by. So Moneyball, thank you for the hammers. Much appreciated. Rich, we're looking at a 14-team Superflex PPR 2.0 for the tight end start 12. Here we go. Darnold, AOC, and any QB out of 53 in a 14-team Superflex. Then we have at running back, Zach Moss. We have Flowers, Dio John, Jacoby Myers, Mike Williams, Wicks, and then at tight end, Laporta, McBride, and Dulcich. Has the 101, 109, 111, 13, 204, and an extra 25 first. Sounds like he has his, thank goodness. I don't see a second part here, actually. So what are you doing with this team? I mean, it needs help. This is a long one. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I was trying to get through like all these names and all the abbreviations like with this. I mean, this team obviously needs a lot of work. It looks like a multi-year thing here. I'm probably actually doing what we said, you know, and, you know, I'm probably going to take Laporta right now at his absolute highest and try to, you know, move him, probably, but him and McBride both, right? Like, because by the time your team gets good, I don't know if these guys are turning it around. You just, because look at the spots that are just it's super flex, right? And you're dead at quarterback. Like, you've got absolutely nothing. And then, you know, wide receiver, your best guy is literally probably a purgatory wide receiver in Zay Flowers. It's just rough, man. I'm probably taking the best assets I have, which unfortunately for this roster right now are Laporta, McBride, and I'm trying to use those as my chips to try to move for more picks and assets. But you got to find a way to get quarterbacks, man. Like, you just got to find a way to get quarterbacks in this format.
I'm on mute anyway. I was about to start talking. It's got to be so expensive to get up to quarterback range at a 14-team super flex, and he's got the 9, 11, 13. And he doesn't have a lot of depth to package. Shane, we'll go to you. What do you think on this one, man? Deep format here. How are you making this less than a 3-year?
Well, it's like Rich said, you're trading Laporta and you're trading McBride. Someone will take Dulcich from you. Someone's car is getting stolen as we're talking here. I told you, Rich, it was going to happen soon. Gunshots are coming next. I'd split the 101. I'm splitting Laporta. I'm splitting McBride. I mean, like you noted, you've got Darnold and AOC at quarterback and then any QB after that. So I don't even know what QBs those are. Josh Dobbs, Tyler Huntley.
User imagination.
Tanner McKee is definitely on this roster. You don't have a choice. You're splitting those. It sucks because your wide receivers are all mid. Like you could move those, except all you're going to get for them is random seconds.
Yeah, this is a start 12, and it's hard to even fill half of those spots. Scott, what do you think here?
Yeah, it's a start 12, 14-teamer. So, I mean, you're looking at a lot more starters relevant here, 168 starters across the league. So even guys like Dio John, Jacoby Myers, like those are locked-in starters.
100%. Guaranteed.
It's a two PPR. You have the top two tight ends. You have the 101. So I'm not saying this team is in any shape to try to win, but it has some high-end assets. You probably have three of the top 20 assets in the whole league here with those two tight ends and the 101. And then you have a couple other pieces that you can move. So I agree you have to split them. I'm probably going to be a little creative. Like this would be one where can I trade Sam Laporta and get back Kyle Pitts in a first? Maybe I have to give up that 113 or that 204, but I'm trying to essentially create value and give up stuff that is it fun to have the 111, 113, 204 in drafts? Yeah, when I have a contending team and I can just take shots. But when I'm counting those as assets that I need to turn into something in the future, as soon as you make those picks, you're sitting there going, man, I really hope the Ladd McConkey I draft ends up being a profit-turning player, not just a good player. If he's the next Jacoby Myers, it's not helping you. You need him to be somebody you can double down and flip midway through the year for a profit. And there's just not a lot of those players in this year's class outside of the top six, top eight. So I think you do need to split, but it's probably one where I'm fine taking a couple risky tear downs for some of the pieces that I have. That's the only way to build it up. You're going to need a shit ton of assets whenever you're going to be ready to contend with this, and you just don't have enough right now. You maybe have five or six pieces you can move, so you got to split them all.
So we already have 635 eyeballs watching us. Thank you for joining on a Tuesday, 11:20 in here. Scott, you start us off here in terms of this wide receiver saturation. I heard Rich saying wide receiver or this purgatory that Zay Flowers could be in. Just take it away, Scott. Talk to me about this topic. I thought it was very interesting and very important.
Yeah, it's been a working theory that I've been coming up with this offseason. And I think we're going to see a shift with this year's receiver class. So we're at this peak point where receivers are the dominant currency in Dynasty. You get in a startup, you get in an underdog draft, you get into an FFPC draft, whatever it is. It's 30 receivers off the board in the top 50 picks. In a startup, you're getting down to the point where people are already drafting the Rashee Rices and the Jaden Reeds. Like they're going over QB2s. Because it's, well, if I don't trust the asset past this year, man, I really don't trust Kirk Cousins or Matthew Stafford. So let me go grab Christian Watson or Deontay Johnson or just any receiver that I feel, okay, they're a receiver. They're not going to kill me. But I'm going to pose this question. I'm going to start with Shane and then I'll go to Rich. Right now, if you are in a, just say a cookie cutter 12 team start 10, 1.5 premium. So no crazy premiums, no super deep ass starters, nothing. Would you give up your ambiguous random 2025 first? And you are not a dominant team, but you're also not a tanking team. You are giving away your lottery ticket that you think has an okay shot of winning, but it also could lose. So you're taking some risk. Would you give up that random first right now for the rights to draft Xavier Worthy? Yes or no?
No.
Nope. No. Rich?
No, thank you.
Yeah, 100% not.
Not? Okay, no. I'm going to go a little bit higher. How about the rights to draft Brian Thomas Jr.? I'm assuming he's a peck above Xavier Worthy in this draft in terms of
so no leverage.
Out.
You're not giving any
one
leverage,
for one.
Scott. I mean, no third. You're not giving anything.
What, how am I feeling that day? Am I feeling disciplined and realizing that Brian Thomas is most likely not?
Those are rare days. Those are
live with the exercise, Shane.
No.
Would you give up that for the 110 in this year's class, not knowing who it is? Nope.
No. Zero chance.
No.
How about Jackson Smith and Jigba or Tank Dell?
I'm not even going to answer.
Are we getting warmer? Are we getting warmer?
We're getting warmer. I would at least consider Tank. I'm not doing JSN.
Okay. That is
I'm
why
at least pausing. If the offer is yes. Tank Dell for mom, I'm at least stopping and I'm mulling it over.
Right.
Okay. That is wide receiver 24 and 25 in Dynasty right now. And here's the point of this exercise. There's a lot of receivers in that range where people would go, oh, I'd give up a first. And we could go down the line to, I've seen Rashee Rice move for first. I've seen the older guys, Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs, those guys still getting moved for somebody that is convincing themselves that it could be a late first. But here's my theory. So that is what's going on right now in Dynasty, right? We already can acknowledge that. There's a ton of receivers. We can go all the way to wide receiver 50 or close to it. Chris Godwin, Calvin Ridley, Keenan Allen. People are still like, I'd give up the 111, 112 for those. And I'm not saying 111 or 112 is worth the future first. I'd rather have the future first. But if I have a 111 or 112, I bet I can kick a second onto that pick and get somebody's mid first next year. So there's a path. So here's my question. We have that going on. We're about to bring in, Rich, I don't know if you've done any mock drafts, but people are jamming 15 receivers into the first two rounds of mock drafts this year.
I've had already four real drafts go down.
And how many receivers? Is it just receivers getting pounded for the first like 25, 30 picks? Just everyone telling themselves a story on 15, 16, 17 of these rookie receivers. And we're adding them to the landscape of all of this saturation that I just talked about. And I'll let you guys talk, but I'm going to go through some comps later. And I would just tell you, is it a successful pick? I'll give you two examples. If I take Javon Baker, Rich, I don't know if you like Javon Baker or not, but let's say Javon Baker goes in the third round to Buffalo. All right. Or just third round to a good spot. Would you be happy if he ends up being Romeo Doubs? Is that a success or no? Say you get him in the late second of the rookie draft. Is that a good pick?
I lean no.
No. Okay. What about
not Romeo Doubs?
Roman Wilson ends up becoming the next Josh Downs. Is that a good pick, Shane? Successful?
No. Let's go with no.
Okay. And I could give 10 more examples like this of receivers right now in Dynasty that you go, that's a usable player. Khalil Shakir, nice receiver. Josh Palmer, nice receiver. None of these guys have any value to the point where if you went and tried to get back into this class so you could draft the next Romeo Doubs with Romeo Doubs. I'm good. I don't really like Romeo Doubs. I'd rather take my shot at the rookie. Yet we're valuing these rookie receivers this year like they are all going to come in and they are all going to fit into the DK Metcalf, DJ Moore, Michael Pittman, Brandon Ayuk, T. Higgins, Devontae Smith. And next year, there's just going to be 12 more of those guys. And that's just not how it works. So I think this is going to be the tipping point. And I think a way to get ahead of it is getting out of a lot of these guys for ambiguous first, understanding how much you need to actually win at receiver and how little you probably need to pay at the bottom end of those ranges while everybody else is paying first for Jordan Addison, Zay Flowers, Tank Dell. Like they're studs and they're just not. So that's my theory, Clay. It's wide receiver saturation. And this year is going to be the tipping point where people start realizing, yeah, I probably shouldn't be paying future first for that wide receiver 26 or wide receiver 20 because it's just not getting me anywhere.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So here's just one, I don't know if it's pushback, whatever. Yeah, it's pushback. I'm going to push back on it.
Pushback, Shane.
Yeah, the comments are cracking me up tonight. Anyway, I don't think anyone that drafts or trades for Jordan Addison goes, oh, cool, I'm getting the wide receiver 24. They go, dude, did you see what he did last year as a rookie? I'm getting him for like a future random first. There's no way he's not going to be a top 10 receiver every year. Like, I think most of the people that when you trade for receivers, that's the outcome that you're expecting. I hope you're not. Well, at least I don't know that I'm purposely trading for like a wide receiver 3, You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going out of my way to do that. And I don't think most of the community is. I could be wrong. I think most of the community, when they make trades for these receivers, they're like, all right, I can't afford CeeDee Lamb. I can't afford Justin Jefferson, but I can afford Zay Flowers, who could be the next Antonio Brown, from what I was told last year. So I'll make that bet. And it won't hit. And then you'll do the same thing next year and just keep trading your future picks. But I mean, that's, I think, the thought process behind it.
What do you think here, Rich?
I mean, there's a lot of things here that I think that have gotten us to this point. You know, one, I think we're in a stage at the wide receiver position where we have kind of finite resources. Maybe the top three of this class will kind of be an elixir for some of those guys, but we have a very short, you know, kind of tier one alpha wide receiver list anyways for Dynasty, because a lot of the really good players at the position are kind of aging out and they're not being handled right there, right? Like, you know, we've got Tyreek's the one guy I think that from an age perspective, everyone's still kind of willing to kind of pay for and be in on. But then you go, when you get down to the Davante Adams, the Cooper Kupps, the Mike Evans, the Keenan Allens, like those guys are, Stephon Diggs, like those guys are, you're falling out of the wide receiver two range. Those guys are all getting taken wide receiver 25 plus. You know, Tyreek's like the one guy that's the exception just because he has like a true spade and he's in like the one setup for him to like just kind of go nuclear.
Just be a hammer until he's done. Yeah.
And then you have to pair this too with not only this running back class, but the current state of the running back, you know, it's where also where running backs are now too. Like I brought this up with Ray. You know, is this the softest running back position's ever been for you guys playing Dynasty? For me, it is. You know, we have essentially like three really good three down running backs. And then you've got a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs, like floating around the outside, guys like Devin Achane, like, you know, these guys are not like when I was growing up playing fantasy football, like these are not the running backs you were looking for, right? Like we're way past.
You're looking the guys for like Brandon Jacobs. Is it, were those the types?
Well, no, just, you know, like the LTs, the guys that, you know, are getting like 300 plus touches, are never coming off the field. They're going to score every touchdown this team scores. Like that doesn't exist at the running back position anymore. And it's made it for a dynasty position. Like I said, like the running back position right now from a dynasty perspective is heinous. Like you know, the guy Scott's reeling off that you're like, oh, I'm not comfortable with that guy at wide receiver 24, 25. Tell me when you get to RB9, the names you're reading off. Like, are you excited to have Kenneth fucking Walker right now? Like, you know, like that's where we are in this running back class that's coming in unison with this wide receiver class is not doing the position from a top down any favors. Now, we know some of these running backs are going to run into productivity and be useful fantasy players, and they'll be values this draft because they're, like Scott said, they're not getting drafted highly in rookie drafts. But I do share some sentiment from this rookie class. I think where Scott is leaning, he didn't say these words out loud, but I think a lot of people are misconstruing this class because the top three guys in this class as it being like an elite wide receiver class. When I do think once you get past those top three guys, the profiles for a lot of the wide receivers after these guys are very sketchy. Like we're talking about very sketchy, and we're talking about a lot of guys that people like, and I'm willing to, at least in prospect season, take the glass half full approach, focus on a guy's positives. But like a lot of this is a weak production profile class, and a lot of these guys played 5 years in college, at least 4 years in college because of the COVID year. It's this wide receiver class, I think, definitely has a lot of fragility in not being as strong as people perceive it.
Rich, you actually said that you've done three or four drafts already. Okay, so those tend to be sharper leagues, right? Not messing around. Could you speak generally to a couple things you noticed that may have been like a bit surprising, and just generally frame up what sorts of formats we're talking? Is it 12 team, 14 team?
They're all 12 team super flex leagues. I do think that, you know, a lot of leagues should draft before the NFL draft. I think it's the best format in my mind. Obviously, if you guys are playing casual, you know, people want to see where guys go for landing spots, but one, it makes your pre-draft conviction matter, right? Like, remember when Hakeem Butler was going like people were taking him 101, 102, and then he gets drafted like at pick 100 and everyone just gets the ejected. Everyone gets to pull their takes back and say, well, now he's a third round rookie pick, or I might take him as a late second, or whatever, because I liked the player before. You know, Malik Willis, you know, a couple years ago was going 101, and he goes in the third round of the NFL draft, and everyone gets a hall pass on that take, right? Like, or where they're drafting him. So it adds conviction. Two, it adds, I think, a lot more activity because of that conviction. Like, you see a lot more trades and jostling because people want to get the guys they believe in or get out of tiers of pockets of players they don't believe in. And those leagues have had a lot more trading than the post draft, where it's a lot more linear, a lot more similar. And then also you get just a lot of guys too that don't have that conviction, right? Like, they don't put a lot of work into the rookies. They let the NFL draft dictate kind of what happens. Mm-hmm. And those guys want to make their picks liquid, right? Like, they want to sell them because they don't have confidence. So you can have these, you those, obviously anyone that plays in a dynasty league should know how people in your dynasty league operate, right? So I know that there's these three or four teams that don't value their rookie picks because they're not watching any of these. So I can go to these teams and try to get a second, get a third, because a guy maybe I want to take a shot on that I think could go higher in 3 weeks, you know, or 2 weeks now. But yeah, but I can say right now, don't believe it. Even all these leagues are super flex. Marvin Harrison went 101 in all four.
Did he really?
And Caleb didn't go. And it's a small sample size of leagues I'm in a four, but Marvin Harrison Jr. went 101 in all four of them.
Yeah. I think one thing to speak to, Clay, about this, and Rich kind of touched on it, is the other thing that goes along with my hypothesis of receiver saturation at the perfect time with a receiver class that people are perceiving is 20, 25 deep. Historically, like, between 15 and 17 receivers go in the first 2 days of the draft. Sometimes it's 11, sometimes it's up to 17, but that's usually the sweet spot. This year could challenge that. But here's the thing. I think the other thing is this receiver class is deep. There are players where I'm getting to wide receiver 25. I'm going, you know what? That guy has as good a shot as wide receiver 10. And I don't think this year you can just go, well, that guy was drafted in the third and that guy was drafted in the fifth, so the third rounder is better. Hell, I think that extends to the late first this year. We saw it last year, but I think this year is going to magnify a lot of the decisions that people made last year on the Pukas and Tank Dells. We saw them kind of come from unusual ranges to hit. Now, were they outliers? Probably from I can't look at their profile and say I can duplicate it this year. But this is going to be a year where I think a lot of people, when they look back at this year's class and how these players did at rookies, we're going to be kind of model busting for a lot of people too, going, you know, that guy came from round four and he was better than that player that the same team took in round two. And we're wondering why the model didn't catch that. And I think it's to what Rich said. There's a lot of weird profiles, but I also think this class is deep enough to where once you get to pick 35, pick 35 to 115, I don't even think there's that big of a difference outside of what quarterback, what offense, what team. That's going to be a bigger driver, which is going to make people uncomfortable with the, oh, that's a first round receiver. Well, I have to take him at the 109. And I don't think so. I think we're, and the reason I brought this up is because right now I think people are looking at those picks where they have the 109 through the 206. They are thinking they are getting the next. It's a guarantee I'm going to get another Jaden Reed or another Rashee Rice. Like, I'm going to get another hit. Then you go through the names, and I'm reading off some of these names like Romeo Doubs and Josh Palmer and Khalil Shakir. I'm going, would you be happy with that outcome? Nah, man, that's not a good outcome. That's a wasted pick. Yeah, people are so excited to make these draft picks. They love Jalen Polk. Man, he's going to go in the second round, might go in the first. Yet they're not a scarce asset. I think we're probably a little bit over our skis. So I just want to bring that up to everybody that, for me, what I'm doing is I'm trying to get out of those picks. I'm trying to move up or I'm trying to move out. And the way to do it, if I can't move my 110 for a future first, you know who I'll move for a future first? Jaden Reed. Exactly. You know what I'll do? Draft another receiver and I'll just roster construct around. I don't need 20 receivers. Roster construction, I think, is going to win at receiver and liquidate those because I think there's going to be a turning point, Rich. Ray's talked about it in the 2025 running back class. You're going to want to... I don't want running backs right now in Dynasty, but if this is the renaissance where it starts to go the other way, guess what people are going to want next year? Your four first rounders that you traded Rashee Rice and Tank Dell and those players to get, because they're not going to be scarce assets.
Yeah, I like that you brought up the phrase arbitrage. I think this wide receiver mm-hmm. class presents a lot of arbitrage opportunity because of where the tiers drop off, right? Like my tiers are pretty deep in this class. Like you said, there are guys like, you know, when you get to that probably what we'll see that tier, like you said, if you have those draft picks, you're looking at, you know, guys like Xavier Worthy, probably, you know, A.D. Mitchell, Troy Franklin, right? And then you like look at their profiles and you're like, yeah, there are just a lot of similar players as you move down the list as those guys are, or in their range of outcomes. Like you're saying, if it works out for this player, it ends up being like, you look at a guy like Brian Thomas Jr. even, who's probably going to be the wide receiver 4 in this draft. If you're in one quarterback leagues, like you're probably gonna have to take him, you know, that 106 spot, like in that area. And you look at guys like who's to say like Devontae Walker isn't close to, because of his range of outcomes to be similar, a Roman Wilson, a Javon Baker. Like these are all guys of similar archetypes, even like and then you kind of go down the list, like even guys like Ladd McConkey is probably gonna get drafted highly, but who's to say like Ladd McConkey, like you can't get, like you can't arbitrage him with like Jalen McMillan, right? Like guys like that, like in their range about Brendan Rice, like those guys can have similar fantasy archetypes as a guy like McConkey, who's going to go at like in that area where Scott's saying you have those picks. I've always said, like, if I had those picks, same thing. I want to move out of those picks. I either want to have a bunch of those picks, like in the same area where I can just buckshot it and say like, hey, I'm taking 3 or 4 of these guys and I'm hoping one to two of them work out. But if you have just one locked in pick in that area from like 108 to 206, like that's a terrible thing. It's a terrible spot to be in this draft. Like I want to move back and have just multiple bites of this draft class. I want to come away. If I'm going to take wide receivers in this draft class, I want to be able to get like 4 or 5 of them from like a pocket, or just kind of keep kicking the can or getting those future picks.
What happened with the running backs in the drafts you've experienced thus far?
Just death. Obviously, so like running backs of this year are going to be dictated by draft capital for sure, right? Like that's like who the Cowboys take, who do the Chargers take?
Oh, how yeah.
high these guys. So like we're seeing like a lot of like in these, like, so the one that I'm doing right now, Jonathan Brooks was the first running back taken at 111. This is super flex.
Okay.
And Corum was RB2. He went 204. So you got people betting on kind of like the players and like, but like, you know, that opening tier, like if Jalen Wright gets drafted by the Cowboys, he's going straight up, right? Up. Like for people, right? And I want to be real cautious on this draft class, especially with the running backs, moving that the class based on these landing spots, right? Because we're not talking about a guy like Najee Harris getting drafted at like pick 20 in the NFL draft, or Josh Jacobs getting the first round. We're going to be talking about a player that is going like pick 50, pick 60, and then basing the destination he goes in that area versus some of these other running backs we've vaulted up the draft boards. I think that's just very tough. I don't think any of these guys have like tremendous profiles and are great top-down bets anyways. So, you know, again, if you're on the board where like you're kind of like, oh, I need a running back, I'm up. Do I just force Jonathan Brooks? Do I force Trey Benson? That's probably not going to be the solution either.
Do you like to take a lot of shots at running back? Just like,
oh yeah, so I'm gonna do the same thing.
Like just
yeah, a, I just give me shots. Just yep. multiple. I'm like that in most rookie drafts, anyways. I just want more picks and make. I want to just luck. I want to try to luck box into as much shit as I can. I liked Puka Nacua last year. I drafted a bunch of leagues based on me liking him, but I wasn't out there like trying to trade for like 204 and jump the gun, right? Like I'm taking him at like, you know, 310 and like 405 and stuff like that. It's like it's not like I had like massive conviction, like, oh, I got one over on my league mates. I got super lucky still.
sure. Hey,
Clay, let me ask I want to ask Shane this too, because I think there's this weird thing with NFL draft, pre-NFL draft rookie drafts, where people will, and I'm curious if you saw this, Rich, where people took receivers actually higher because the justification was, well, I'm pretty sure that guy's going to get draft capital. I know that guy's going to go in the first two rounds. But the reality is, if a receiver goes at pick 49, you know, that's where Tyquan Thornton went. You know, there's a lot of receivers that go in that range, and they're going to go in that range this year, that are just never going to have a chance to be anything for fantasy, especially if you're going to start 10. Now, where I love this receiver class and where this theory that I talked about for the last 15 minutes doesn't apply is if you're in, you know, we're about to start a 14 team start 11 best ball league. You know what? Give me all the Romeo Doubs and the Josh Palmers in best ball. You know, I can roster 15 of those guys And I don't care if there's a threshold of, man, they have to finish top 24 or they need a 20% target share. Like, none of that stuff matters. So it's totally opposite. But Shane, if you had to do all your rookie drafts in the next 4 days, okay, how many receivers would you just draft because you're like, man, I'm pretty sure that guy's going to get top 50 draft capital? And how many picks are wasted based on that? Because I know you don't like running backs. I don't like running backs. And I doubt you're going to be taking the RB2 over the wide receiver six if I told you the wide receiver six is going in the first round and the RB2 is going in the third round. But that, I think that's a blind spot because the wide receiver six in this class that goes in the first, they just fall, most likely their outcome is they fall into that big saturated bucket.
I will say this though. Everyone knew Tyquan Thornton should not have been drafted where he was drafted except for New England. So if you then drafted Tyquan Thornton because of draft capital in the first two rounds, you deserve the nut punch that came.
Yet you look at his profile and there's about five guys in this class. People are pumping up and their profiles are worse than his.
Worse than Thornton.
I will say this. I've read a couple draft guides. And I haven't seen any Tyquan Thornton comps yet. No one's throwing that comparable out there, but I've seen, you see the high end ones, but I have not seen the Tyquan Thornton one because I would run like hell. I mean, again, where's that running back two going? Is he going in the second round? Because if he's not going to the third round, well, then it's a lot easier for me to fade him for that wide receiver six, even though I probably don't want to. I mean, it's kind of like Rich said earlier. There's three wide receivers that are locked and loaded. And then I like BTJ, and then honestly that's about all I like of this class that I expect anything. Like, I know other wide receivers will come out of nowhere, like Puka Nacua. I know if Ladd McConkey can stay on the field, he's going to have 170 receptions in his rookie year because he's gritty and whatnot, but I am really only in on those four. So if I have an excuse, and I've done it already in the rookie drafts that we have, if I have an excuse or an opportunity to take Blake Corum, Jonathan Brooks, or Trey Benson, I have. So when they're sitting there at 202 and there's wide receivers that I think might have first round draft capital or second round draft capital, I've been taking those running backs. And when there is nothing to separate those running backs talent wise, or at least not definitively, I think the landing spot is going to matter. Now, Dallas looked like a great spot, but Royce Freeman just landed there, so who knows?
You never know.
Let me throw this out real quick. What impacted your dynasty team more in a 12-team start 10 type format? Josh Downs for his career or Damian Pierce for 1 year?
Damian Pierce for 1 year. Absolutely.
And I think that is the.
But you also didn't pay for Damian Pierce, right? Like,
no, you got.
I was a year late.
But it doesn't matter if I told you Damian Pierce for the 112 this year versus draft the next Josh Downs, you would make the decision to go give me the 1 year at running back. And I know that asset is going to be volatile going forward, but you'd rather have the 1 year. But yet we're drafting, and I think it's just we're drafting with the. Everyone has rose-colored glasses, right? The guy they take at the 112 is going to be the astronomical hit that doubles in value. But man, if all I get is Damian Pierce, that's a wasted pick.
But dude, that's the beauty of dynasty football. That's why it's the best format, man. Like, it's why it's the best format. It's because wide receivers hold all these they just hold their value longer in dynasty and longevity, so people want to hold on that. But one running back one season makes a larger difference than like any wide receiver two season, wide receiver three different season. No, that's what's great, man. It's the beauty of it. It's great. It's because you want to depress running backs, but in an isolated season, having a RB1 is such an advantage over the field. Now, they granted the back end of those guys is kind of nebulous. Like, obviously you have like CMC and we got the Breece Halls of the world and stuff too, but like. Then you get like a season where like you said, Damian Pierce pops up or Rashad White pops up last year, or, Kyron Williams pops up, and like those guys can be very fleeting. But that one season just made such a difference in terms of winning league championships versus even a Jaden Reed who you hit on, so that's great. It's what makes the format amazing.
So Rich, why are people so hesitant to pay the 112 for DeAndre Swift? Or something like that, where aren't they taking a shot on a very similar thing, and they're hesitant because they're scared that, oh man, he's not going to hold his value. He's a running back. What if he gets hurt? Yet they're going to sit there and draft Ladd McConkey and hope he becomes Jaden Reed.
You know the answer to that, though.
I'm working through the exercise.
Everyone's drafting with rose-colored glasses. I'm drafting.
That's what I'm trying to point out, Shane.
And also the belief away. And also the belief that these guys are just going to retain more value, right? Like, you can have a wide. Look at JSN. JSN objectively failed hard last year. And where is he still going?
Correct.
Where is he still going? Where is his perceived value? Now, where's Damian Pierce's value right now?
He's a buy as a throw in, worth nothing, maybe a late third.
What running back was going around? What running back was closest to JSN last year in the rookie draft?
Charbonnet, Kendre Miller,
To Rich's point, Charbonnet failed as well, right? But one of those dudes you can actually still trade for most of the return, and it ain't Charbonnet, it's JSN
And I don't think the answer is just draft running backs over receivers. I think the answer is, I'm just giving everybody a heads up. The worst thing you can do is sit there and just make every pick from 109 to 206 and think I'm going to hit. Because even if you hit on a Zay Flowers or a Rashee Rice or a Jaden Reed, that's like the 10% of the outcome that you're hoping for. The more likely outcome is, okay, I got a Josh Downs, right? I got somebody that's not a bust, but I don't know if he ever helps me. He doesn't ever turn a profit. I can't even flip him for what I paid last year. And that's going to happen in a lot of times this year's class. So I want to make that out there before use those picks recklessly.
But also, you know what you can do with those mid wide receivers, Jaden Reed, Zay Flowers, JSN. I can put two of them together like Voltron and go get a really good wide receiver from most people, because they go, well, two of these dudes is, that's better than the one good player, the one much better player that's only going to outscore the other dude by 4 points a game. And you're like, yeah, sure. No, that's definitely how that works. You take these two okay players, I'll take your one better player, but you've definitely won that trade.
Let me ask you to spin this in a different direction, a different angle here. So this free agency period and this NFL draft is showing us kind of like how the NFL values this running back class, right? Like, you know, a lot of veterans hit the market and they all were signed. Like, they all had good contracts in the NFL. How many of those guys are you willing to buy out the door at this point for your twos and your threes? Not even let's not even say your threes. Let's say your twos. Let's say you have 206. Are you giving 206 for one more bite at the Derrick Henry apple?
Yes.
Like 206, right? What about, like, all right, so maybe he was too high. Like, I went, like, Aaron what about Jones. Aaron Jones? I was going to say Aaron. What about James Conner?
Oh, yeah, James Conner until he dies. Like forever.
But these are guys like gamers are, like, desperately trying to get out on because they hear the bell ringing, right? Like, they do this all the time and they panic. But, like, it's okay to let the go down the ship with some of these guys. But these are guys James Conner finishes, say, let's say James Conner, Aaron Jones finishes as like RB10 this year. Like, you're probably going to get more out of that than you ever will that pick that
206.
That goes back to people just believe that, one, they're better drafters than anyone else. Like, everyone in a rookie draft swears to God that they're a great drafter, because everyone that has Puka Nacua on their team last year loves to show you that they drafted him, like you said, in the fourth round. Well, if you know he's good, I don't know
why. I won't show you my first three picks I made, but I'll show you Puka Nacua.
The first three flame out.
Mayer, you know,
I've cut two of them already, but I hit on Puka, so I'm good at this. I don't even remember what my point was. That was just funny.
Well, I think one more thing to just mention with this is, if you're going to draft the receivers, I think one thing that's very important, we're actually working on something at DD to try to contextualize this, is understand, Rich mentioned JSN, right? Understand the player's perception / likability before you press draft. Because if you have a prospect people don't like and his rookie year looks like JSN, he's buried.
But A.D. Mitchell's that dude, right? Like, if A.D. Mitchell catches 40 passes as a rookie, he's going to go from, like, dynasty, like, wide receiver 30 to, like, wide receiver 50.
And some of the profiles people didn't love, right? The Ladd McConkeys, the Ricky Pearsalls. Those guys are good until people realize, man, that's probably a 60 for 800 receiver. And it's not that he's not going to be good. He's going to have no dynasty demand. You drafted him at the 204. You can't even get a second out of him now, because people just categorize him as, he doesn't matter.
Yeah, Tyler
Boyd. That's where you have to think before you spend that asset. What is the perception of this player if he fails? And Shane has been very adamant about JSN and how what he did last year was a failure projecting him forward. But I would argue it doesn't matter because you bought another year. If you wait another year and he does the same thing and then you complain that he's not worth anything.
That's the key point. Exactly. Right there. You bought yourself this year to get out on.
Correct.
Him, but too many people are yelling at me, telling me that I'm not that bright in so many words. and going, they're going, I'm going to die on this JSN hill when the JSN hill is literally littered. Like it's just piled on other receivers that did the exact same thing in their rookie years and then went on to be absolute nothing. Like wide receiver fours. Maybe they'll pop for a wide receiver three season, but too many people won't get out on them. But
okay, Rich, do you remember the wide receiver one in the 2017 class? Do you remember 2017? Who it was? 2017. Yep.
I'm trying to think of
went in the top 10.
That was. Wait, that is that the year the three dudes went in the top 10?
Mm-hmm.
So it was, yeah, so it was John Ross, Mike Williams, and Corey Davis was the first one.
Corey Davis. Corey Davis.
Nicely done.
Corey Davis was a top 24 dynasty receiver for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So you look back and go, oh, he was a bust. No, you were the bust if you held him into year three and you still didn't move him. Now, could you have moved him for what you paid? No. But after a year, you could have gotten out for 90% of what you paid. It's the same with JSN. You took him at 106 last year. You could probably get the 108, 109 for him right now. And yet if he busts and he ends up just being a 800, 900 yard receiver, people are going to go, oh, man, he was a whiff. But the whiff was you drafted him and held him and ignore what Shane was saying. So I think understanding who that player is, a guy like Keon Coleman, A.D. Mitchell, they will not be gifted that same grace. If they are not better than JSN, at minimum, they're done. They're just cast off. No one wants them next year.
Right.
Sure. Here, let's pivot real quick to a trade, and then we'll see where this goes. Shane, we're going to start with you on this one from Kyle S. Thank you very much for the hammer. Appreciate it. 12-team Superflex, half PPR. It is full PPR for the tight ends. Start nine, so a shallow one here. Watson, Levis, Dimes at QB. We have James Cook, Tajay Spears, and Chase. I did it again. We've got Watson, Levis, Dimes at quarterback. We have Cook and Tajay at running back. Okay. Wide receiver is Chase, Wilson, Amari, Christian Watson, and then at tight end, Michael Mayer. 101, 109, 110, 112, 201 as the picks. What moves would you make here, Shane? The activity level's mid. Said he tanked for the 101 after QB injury hell. Caleb with one. What do you think?
Oh, Jesus. Sorry. I don't mean to infer that this team's not good, but it's not often that I see a start nine and I'm like, you need a lot of help. But you could probably, you have no quarterbacks, right? You have Watson. I guess you could go to battle with him and Caleb.
That's why he says he's got Caleb with one. He's got him sharpied as 101 with that pick.
I mean, okay, so let's assume Caleb hits, Watson turns into the Texans Watson, then you're fine. Then you've got Chase and Wilson. You're good there. I'd probably be moving Watson, but nobody wants him. Mayer, probably nobody wants him. I don't know. This is one of those questions where we get this a lot. What should I do when I don't have assets to do anything? I don't know. Move Chase. Can I move Chase for the 102 and something else? I don't know. What do you want?
What does he have here?
Shaking his head. What do you
He's got the 109, the 110, the 112, and a 201 in a half PPR where I'm betting he's looking at those picks going, man, I'm just going to slam four receivers there, which is probably the worst thing you can do. We're talking
about the running backs. Yeah. I mean, honestly,
what do you do here?
You combine those picks, you're going to start nine. I guarantee you people still like the 109, 110, 112. I guarantee I could trade two of those. Let's go 109 and 201 to get to like 105, 106. Can I combine the 10 and the 12 kick them to 2025 and get firsts and just try to hope that I get earlier picks than 10 and 12? And the percentages will be really on my side to do that.
What do you think, Rich? What would you do with this squad? Specifically, let's look at the 9, 10, 12, and 201. Are you trying to kick those back to 25? It's a shallow format, but this is not here.
Love to. I mean, as wild as it sounds, there's like outs for this team to almost be competitive as early as this year, probably in this format.
You can see it. Yeah.
Like you squint to see it. I'm assuming that's Garrett Wilson, right?
Yes.
I don't know.
Wait, is there another Wilson?
There's a bunch of Wilsons out
there. Michael, yeah. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, you're right. If it's Michael Wilson, this team's even worse. Look, I just want to go back. When I was talking about moving Chase, you move Chase for a quarterback, like top four quarterback, and then you don't need to draft Caleb with one. You go.
Mark. Here's the problem, though, with this roster, though, is he's got a bunch of bubble players like that could just be dead. Like, there's a lot of dudes whose value could absolutely just crater hard. Obviously, it starts with the three quarterbacks he currently has. Those guys could, even in Superflex, those guys could take a massive hit this season. Tajay and James Cook are kind of those guys that we talk about. Like, they're just like, they're kind of purgatory running backs. Like, they don't get that workload we desire to have those tilting seasons. It's why a dude like Rashad White's able to run them down. Rashad White didn't do anything special last year, but you know what? He didn't come off the field. He didn't play with a mobile quarterback. And like, that gets you to fantasy football. James Cook has like that problem. But then you have Chase, you have Garrett Wilson. Amari is a guy that can tumble. I'm assuming that's Christian Watson. So Christian Watson is another guy who could absolutely bubble out and he can plummet. Michael Mayer could be dead in year three. Like, you have a lot of guys we can squint. You're like, if this breaks the right way, I actually could have a competitive team as early as this year. But also you're holding just a lot of fragile assets. And if you can come off of those guys, package with those deals, like, can you do Amari plus 109, 110, 112, and turn that into something? Like, can you do that instead of maybe try to sell the isolated picks? Like, take some of those fragile guys, the Christian Watsons, you know, even Deshaun Watson. Can you use the hopium of Deshaun Watson, you know,
to use that word.
Because, I mean, as shitty as Deshaun Watson is as a human and as a real life quarterback, like, he's locked in for three more years and his full games were still good for fantasy because of the way fantasy football is played.
Yeah, but I gotta be honest with you, Rich. No one cared about that.
Nope.
Watson, because I tried to jump on that hill of technically we were correct on Deshaun Watson last year. If you just look at the full games he played, but everyone has pointed out to me that I am incorrect and he did not have a good football or fantasy season.
Well, Clay, what are you doing that team? Because this is something that people always ask about. Mm-hmm. Start nine, start eights. Our rule: you cannot tier up. Then what do you do? How do you accrue value tier up wise without actually finding an idiot to give you a stud for Amari Cooper in the 109, which is probably not going to happen if it's like people like us in the league. We're not itching to move our 103 to get two pieces in a start nine where we have a lot of rosters that probably look similar. So what's the strategy? Here's the other thing. You probably want to try to move a couple of those picks for future first, just because I don't want to pick at the 110. I don't want to pick at the 112 in this class in a half PPR. You know, can I move two of those for a future first? Can I trade one of those for a running back? Because it's half PPR. Mm-hmm. I'll just go to bat with what I have. And guess what? Christian Watson falls off. Will Levis falls off. Michael Mayer falls off. I have three firsts next year. So I'm hedging my bets by not making those picks. But I feel a contender would go, let me trade all those picks for players right now. Try to win. Doesn't work. And then I'm left with nothing next year. So I would kind of hedge my bets there.
I feel like we've been given this same exact advice. Like, if you go back 2 years ago, 15 years ago, 35 years ago, and we were talking about late round first round draft picks, like since our inception, we've been going, yeah, you need to try to trade that to next year. And no, you can't do it in some of the leagues that we play in, but you can do that in most leagues because people.
I mean, what you can trade in that league for sure is the 101.
Yeah,
I need a 102 and a 104.
That's aggressive.
I'm very specific, very particular.
that other owner happens to have that.
I mean, that's what I said. You know, I'm in the leagues that I've drafted, and you know, Marvin Harrison's gone over Caleb because I think the perception is Marvin Harrison has a chance to be one of those wide receiver one Gibraltars. Whereas, where does Caleb go? We know the quarterback position is just currency itself, but where does Caleb go in terms of fantasy ceiling, right? Like, what is his upside? Can he get to Allen Hurts? I don't think he can. I honestly think that's a very, very thin outcome for him. I think you're probably looking at him being like in that, like Lawrence, Burrow-y? Like Herbert, like, yeah, like that type of area. And like, those guys are almost overvalued in fantasy football.
Don't say.
So, Rich, if you go to the team that's shaky, I will offer you the 101 and that 201. You give me your Trevor Lawrence and your 25 first next year, which could be top three, top four if your team fails. Which side are you taking on that deal?
Yeah, I think
you're betting against Caleb, but you're getting Trevor Lawrence, but you're moving the 201 for basically a coin flip mid first next year.
Yeah, yeah, I'm taking the other the backside. I'm gonna kick that. I'm gonna take a quarterback that's already Lawrence isn't going anywhere. Even if he never improves his station in fantasy football, the dude's gonna play a dozen more years.
He's Jared Goff.
He's got the longest leash.
He'll play a dozen more years, easy.
Yep.
More years squared because he'll put up quarterback.
But I think that's what makes this whole class fun this year, right? Like, because the 101 quarterback, I think a lot of people definitely will look at the quarterback class, and everyone inherently understands Jaden Daniels has a higher ceiling. But also, we just lived through the Justin Fields era where people tried to hang on to the 11th hour of that and got scored and they got scorched.
Yeah, let me ask you that. And Rich, I know we only have you for another minute. I want you to plug whatever cool stuff you've got going on.
I'm just shooting shit, man. This is cool. I'm down.
You can hang as long as you want. But I did want to ask you the quarterbacks. How were the Penixes and Bo Nixes and all handled in your pre-NFL draft rookie drafts?
Yeah,
and what are your thoughts on them? Like, what are your moves? Is it another thing where again you want to take some shots in some of your leagues, just throw some darts at those guys as well?
Yeah, Penix and Bo Nix went in the mid to low two range. The top quarterbacks. I mean, JJ McCarthy is probably the first dude you talk about, right? Like JJ McCarthy, where he's going, because if you're in a Superflex league, he's typically going in that bow of picks that leads into what Scott said, 106 to 108. Like he's kind of floating in there. Like, how excited are you to make that pick? Like, even if you're pro JJ McCarthy, how excited are you to make that pick from a fantasy football stance? Like, what is the outcome that he has to hit to be to tilt anything? Like, even in Superflex, if you're literally drafting him just for the currency, he's going to retain that value that you hope to trade him. But there's no upside there. There's really not. It's really just Jaden Daniels. And when you talk about Bo Nix and Michael Penix, this is what also makes this class so weird is the COVID stuff, right? Like, these dudes took full advantage. Like, these dudes maxed out that extra year to their Jaden Daniels won a Heisman. If all these guys have to come out last year, where do they go? They're third round picks, in the NFL draft, easy. Dudes are taking a shot, on pedigree. All of them had that. But all these guys went nuclear. If we do happen to see Penix and Bo Nix sneak into the first round of the NFL draft, they'll literally be they'll be 4 and 5 in terms of the oldest first round quarterbacks ever drafted. The oldest quarterbacks drafted in the first right now are Brandon Whedon, LOL. Would have never happened in this era. I don't know how it ever happened.
Chris Wanky.
Where's he at?
Wanky was 63 when he was drafted.
Carson Palmer, and then Jason Campbell.
Burrow was older, right? But nowhere near the.
But also remember, Burrow was still the first quarterback taken in the class. We're talking about the fifth or sixth quarterback taken in the class.
Yep.
And this is why these teams, if you're the Denvers, the Minnesotas, the Seattles, the Las Vegas Raiders, how could you possibly sell yourself on taking one of those players when you have just infinite needs on your rosters right now at that spot? Because it's one thing if you're reaching on the quarterback one and you're overlooking something. You're talking about the quarterback 5 or 6 in this draft class and doing that. It's absolutely bonkers, man. Well, it's absolutely nuts.
They're just hoping that they strike gold and that they're getting a franchise quarterback relatively cheaply compared to everyone else, relatively cheaply, rather than trading up and going, all right, I'm the Raiders. Maybe I should try to trade up and get Jaden Daniels instead. Yeah. Let me take Bo Nix and just give up. Just drafting Bo Nix in any situation, real football, fantasy football, that is the epitome of giving up. You need to check in on people that draft Bo Nix. They might not be okay. Things could be going wrong in their life.
We've had this debate, Shane, so many times.
And it's one of our best TikToks recently, actually.
Sam Howell was trading for first last year. And I guess I am intrigued by those guys going in the late second, Rich, because if you draft wide receiver 12, Ricky Pearsall there.
Yeah.
What the hell are you hoping to do with that?
Yeah.
You get Josh Downs, maybe. What is the plan? I can tell you,
one of the picks was me. I took it just on your principle. I had 211, and the wide receiver is my choice. I took Michael Penix at 211 on just principle of the format. And let me see. Let me tell you the receivers that were there at that point that went around him. The next running back taken was Will Shipley. The next wide receiver taken was Jermaine Burton. Then Brendan Rice. So that's where we were already. And so I just took the quarterback on principle.
As you should.
There's the landing spot elevation. One of those guys goes to Minnesota. One of them goes to Denver. The Raiders. Somebody like that. It's an easy flip. But here's the thing. Will people have the discipline to sell that quarterback when they land somewhere and accept the two future seconds that they get offered for Michael Penix when he takes over as a starter? Even if he's only going to start for half a year, you go in the second round, which I'm very confident Nix and Penix go in the second, if not higher. It is a guarantee they will get a chance to start for a pocket of time, whether that's 4 games, 8 games, whatever. Will you have the discipline to just take the profit? Because I would argue that's easier profit than drafting Brendan Rice and hoping you can ever sell him for anything. Yet people will still do it. So I'm shocked they went that far, Rich. I actually think people would have taken him higher. First, early second.
Well, if we draft the same league post-draft and Michael Penix goes in a, let's just say one of those teams even doesn't even take them at 12 or 13. They trade down and take them at 20, in the 20s or something. That quarterback's still going to be, he's still going to go, like, he's going to go probably flirt with what? Being a high two, maybe even flirt with like a 1-2 turn in the super flex format. Oh,
Penix is going in the first if he's drafted.
The thing is, I don't care if they even go in the first round of the draft. If they go in the second, a team is not drafting them in the second round of the draft to go, we're going to sit you behind Trevor Lawrence for your rookie contract. They're drafting them to give them a shot to be the next Brock Purdy, to be the next Dak Prescott or Russell Wilson. Odds are it doesn't work, and that team's right back in the quarterback pool next year.
Well, it doesn't work when you try to do it.
Of course.
But there's a pocket of time.
And that's the same thing like you brought up with like the Puka Nacua thing. Like, you can't force Puka Nacua. You have to luck box into that. And it's a reason why like the quarterbacks, like they're so sparse, but you have a gap between you go from Dak to Purdy, right? Like
I am just hoping that Bo Nix, the Vikings trade up for Bo Nix, and that's the guy. That's the penultimate pick where Shane is going to have to reconcile his bias if Bo Nix goes in the first to Minnesota.
No, I don't.
Be in then, Shane?
No, he's not good at football. He's going to start one game, and everyone's going to go, oh, wait, yeah. So is there another dump off? Is that another dump off? Wait, that's another dump off? Oh, where's Bucky Irving to make this guy to take one of these dump offs for 70 yards so Nix's stats can look good? I get the point of taking him so you can flip him. Sure, at 110, 111, fine. Take him. He has one good preseason game. Somebody gets hard for him. I find the Minnesota fan in the league, because there's always at least one dude from Minnesota in every fantasy league. So then I'll trade him to him.
We just lived it with Kenny Pickett
that's the downside, right? Kenny Pickett never gave you a chance to flip him. Now, I bought him. I overpaid for him in a league.
That's a lie.
Stupidity. When did
you could have people were taking Kenny Pickett in the first? You could have flipped him for a first preseason hype last year. People don't have.
Yeah, that's
the
true. That's true. He did. That's
they
true. He
read
did.
Into the Michael Penix on the Vikings, and they think he's the next Dak, and they can't move him without getting a first. And then they wait, and then he ends up being Kenny Pickett, and then they bitch because he was a bust when the window existed. It's the same argument as Corey Davis.
So every one
people
of these,
don't have the discipline.
Yeah, so every one of these mid-ass prospects, the correct answer is, sure, draft them, and then be ready to move them immediately when the market says it's time to move them. Don't hold on to them. Don't get greedy and go, you know what? Kenny Pickett did have a great preseason. And I did hear Mike Tomlin say really, really nice things about him. So maybe he will be the quarterback 14 next year. So I should hold on to him.
and his hands grew. Here, Shane, here's a trade that we have to hit. I believe this is from the Bill Willichicks, if I'm remembering correctly. 10-team Superflex, half PPR. It is full PPR for the tight ends. 4 point per passing touchdown. Start 9, Shane. Lamar, Arich, Stafford, Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. Bijan Ramondre at running back. Tyreek, London, Garrett Wilson, Godwin, Jacoby, Downs. And then at tight end, Goddard and Otten. No first, second, third. Does have all future picks. This is a mid to low activity league. Says he feels like he needs to stick with what he has unless a tight end upgrade opportunity presents itself. Considering tearing down from Arich and picking up a late 24 first or 25 first. What do you think here, Shane? Shallow, 10-team Superflex, half PPR, start 9, 4 point.
I just came all over myself thinking about Lamar and Arich and his start 9. Are you kidding me? I had to yell at someone in the patron chat the other day. Like I should have been driving, but I saw like his QB room was like this. And he's like, guys, should I tear off of this? We're like, it's start 9. No, like these are two people that are going to put up crooked numbers. Like these are two dudes that can win you weeks by themselves. I don't want to tear down from that. Besides the fact you already have Stafford and Rodgers. So what's the purpose? Like I'm going to tear down the Herbert, for example. Sure. Herbert can give you some nice weeks, but it's probably not in his range of outcomes to put up the types of weeks that Lamar can hit, that Arich can hit. Now, and I know there's risk involved with Arich, but whatever. I don't care. I'm taking that risk. Was there another follow-up to that? I'm sorry. I got really excited about the quarterback room.
Yeah. You said you did something all over yourself. Do you need to go change? Do you need to go change?
We can move on to Rich's thoughts. You're it's good. Fine. No, I'm not tearing down off of Arich. I will tear down off of Arich if I can get Kyler Murray and a 25 first. I'll do that because people still undersell what Kyler Murray is. Honestly, I might add to Arich to get Jalen Hurts to take out what I believe is some of the risk to Arich and go get fancy Arich, an Arich that's actually shown that he can do it on the football field and remain healthy for a season.
What do you think here, Scott?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. He's probably thinking, or he or she, I'm not sure who it is, with asked the question, but he's probably looking at this saying this isn't a good enough team to win. But you have Bijan could be a hammer. Tyreek could be a hammer. Drake London maybe could be a hammer. You have two hammer QBs. That's what's going to determine whether this team wins or loses. Those five players, period. And I don't care who the other starters are. You have good enough starters with Godwin, Wilson, Ramondre. You can get by. You have future picks probably to bail you out one or two times on a running back if they get injured. You can roster construct at running back, grab a bunch of backups. This team's going to be determined on what the top probably four players, Bijan, Tyreek, Richardson, Lamar, three of those players hit their mean every month or every week. You're going to probably win most weeks. Two of them get injured. The roster has nowhere to go. So it's just very fragile. But like to look at this and say, oh man, I don't have any picks, because people, when they don't have picks, they feel their team can't get any better and it's not good enough. This team's already good enough to win. In a start 9, you have four potential difference makers, like top five players at their position. Yep. You don't need more than that. You don't need more depth. The only suggestion I could have would maybe trade a guy like Drake London or Garrett Wilson for like extra leverage potentially. Can I get two firsts for Drake London? 25 and a 26 just to insulate myself for the future in case something happens to Bijan or something happens to one of my QBs, but that's it. Those are what's going to determine whether you win or lose.
Yeah. No, sounds good. Good stuff there.
No, okay. Jesus. Apparently we missed Bill's question. I don't know whose question that was. I'm going to put Bill's up.
Nice. That wasn't me. He says Bill Willichicks. We're just dying to knock out Bill Willichicks' question tonight. Now, we love you, Bill. He says, my question was a 12-team Superflex tiered PPR start 10, quarterbacks Arich, Young, Levis. He has trash cans at running back. And Rich, we'll start with you on this one. Wide receivers, Ayuk, Olave, London, Devontae Smith. Also has DK Metcalf, Reed, and Wicks. Kincaid at tight end. You are working with a 104, 105, couple late seconds and thirds. You do have 325 firsts and seconds. And I guess that is the, is there another part, Shane? Sure.
He just, so I literally I'm very confused because I don't know how many skies there are in there. There's at least three. Who's on this team?
Oh, in the... Are you talking about the Hammers? I'll worry about that. Let me keep reading this. So, too early to add some running backs and compete, or do we go all in next year? Okay. You want to put the first one back up for me, Shane? And then I'll... That's good.
He's also got a trade. And, you know, again, we're this question is literally coming in as we're trying to do this. So, Rich, go for the second part first with that roster that you see. And then he's got an inbox trade that we can hit.
Yeah, I mean, my first thing is, like, you know, I talked about this with Ray a little bit last week on my show. That tier that Ayuk, that the Drake Londons, the Devontae Smiths, DK Metcalfs, like, if you can turn those guys into Breece Hall, if you can turn those guys into Jahmyr Gibbs, like, that's something I definitely want to do if I can, just because the gap between the top of the running back position, if you can do it. But obviously, that's not easier said than done. You need the gamer that has one of those players to be willing to give you those one of those players for those for like a what I perceive as, like I said, like, I don't call them purgatory wide receivers. These are good ass wide receivers. But like, it's DK Metcalf, right? It. Like, think about what we've lived with DK Metcalf so far to this point in his career. He's not been a bad player at all. He's been a really good player. He's never gotten over that hump. Will he ever get over that hump? People will keep chasing it. I don't know if he's going to get there or not. I mean, there's definitely the perception he still can, but that's where I see those guys like Devontae Smith, Drake London. Like, could they have like a wide receiver 6+ season in them at some point throughout the journey of their career? Yes. Are they going to do it regularly? Probably not. So if you can turn those into one of those, because like I said, one Breece Hall season could actually win it for you, even if you have trash can running backs with him. Mm-hmm. It could win you a fantasy championship. It can. So I mean, I like using a lot of that tier. You have a lot of those wide receivers in that same tier of guys. Unfortunately, the QBs were, who were they?
Richardson, Bryce Young.
I mean, Richardson's enough to where a season hits you with, like, yeah, if it's super flex, like, you just don't have enough you don't have a second guy to be a hammer. Like, you're gonna need Will Levis to pull a rabbit.
Oh, you went here to Will Levis and not Bryce Young.
Jesus. I did, absolutely. For fantasy football, I went to Will Levis for sure. Wow. But Bryce Young, from a fantasy football stance, like, I don't know what outs he has. And this was the problem we had with him last year, you know, vaulting him, you know, in super flex leagues where he was. And it's what we talked about with this class, right? With these guys, even Caleb, like, he's not even remotely has the rushing ability that Caleb has. So, like, how's he going to get there, right? Like, Bryce Young, do you ever see him flirting with the perennial 35+ touchdowns as a passer?
Yes, I do.
Dude, if Bryce Young could get to like QB 15, we would consider that be like one of the biggest rescue jobs in history.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yes, that would be an overwhelming success. And we're talking about, can he get to like Aaron Rodgers, Matthew Stafford range? Not the peak, those guys, like where they are today.
Yes, today's.
I need someone to look at the ADP machine. There's no doubt in my mind that Bryce Young was a top 10 quarterback at some point last year in ADP.
He had to be like right around there. But I look at Will Levis and I'm like, he could do some dumb shit and end up being good for fantasy. Like, there's an outcome to that, especially when you talk about the changes that Tennessee team is making. You know, obviously the odds that Will Levis is good, we live this with Desmond Ridder, we live like from where he went in the draft, are very thin. But when you look at the changes that were made, I mean, he was in a system that literally had just guys running downfield. He was forced to throw literally go balls. No guy threw the ball further downfield. And it was a route thing, too. It was a route concept thing. Like, you have DeAndre Hopkins running go routes at age 31. Like, there's better ways to use DeAndre Hopkins. Mm-hmm. But now they're going to run a shitload of 11 personnel. They've got functional players in the field. They've got two interchangeable running backs. What they do on the offensive line is to be determined. But I'm like, hey, I can squint to see some dumb shit happening for Will Levis. I think Will Levis has more outs to have a legit QB1 season than Bryce Young. That feels awful to say out loud.
But I mean, that makes me dead inside a little bit more than usual. But didn't, what was it? Will Levis averaged like 1.4 yards per attempt or something last year, rushing attempt, something ridiculous. Like, he would just run into the back of people. Like, he's basically Mark Sanchez.
It's the Will Levis experience. He's a live asset, but before we forget this last part, let's
like Daniel Jones put, let's, 2 years ago, right? Like I think Will Levis could like have a dumbass Daniel Jones.
And then if he does, you get out. So here we go. Discipline is the concept tonight. Then wide receiver bubble, but really it's discipline. Get the hell out. Like just Will Levis had 2 QB1 weeks back to back. I'm out. He's yours.
Yeah. But Scott laid out on those other guys, like the Jaden Reeds, like what to do with those guys. I mean, you have movable pieces.
So at the end, I just want to address this inbox offer. So this is sitting in his inbox. Okay. Are you trading the 105 in London for CeeDee Lamb if this is your team? 12 team super flex tiered PPR start 10.
Scott's a no. I'm a yeah.
I'm a no because you don't need to get out of those receivers. You have 6 top 30 receivers. You don't need top 10 receivers to win. What this guy needs is a better quarterback. He needs a hammer running back. I'm not giving up extra assets here. I'm taking advantage of the fact that, guess what? He has 5 top 20 receivers on this team. And I know they're all good. DK Metcalf's good. Devontae Smith's good. Brandon Ayuk's good. They're not going anywhere. They're going to give me 15 point per game, any neater seasons going forward. What I need is a hammer somewhere. And the hardest place, I think, to get a hammer probably in this league is likely going to be at running back. That's where I want to use those picks on. Like, you're not winning with this running back room, but I don't need to upgrade at receiver. This is not a good enough team where I'm starting to consolidate. Get me a better quarterback. Get rid of Bryce Young. Count him as a first. Add him to a deal. Seriously. Go offer the 105 and Bryce Young for Breece Hall.
You won't get it. I get your point. I mean, honestly, I would take this deal and then I would go move my 104 for A-Chain. I'd offer, obviously, for Bijan and Breece, but I'd set on, or not A-Chain, excuse me, on Gibbs. Sorry, that's a little, even that, with my A-Chain love, that's a little much. Gibbs.
A little pricey even with your A-Chain love.
So, but why not offer the 104 for Gibbs? Secure Gibbs. And then go to somebody with the 105 and Bryce Young and go get Kyler Murray.
Oh, if I could do that, obviously I'm smashing that. Yeah.
I think if you offer 105 and Bryce Young, you got a shot to get a guy like Kyler Murray.
Yeah, specifically Kyler Murray, because most of the fantasy community is blind to how good he is. So yeah, I like that move.
I mean, you could probably get Lawrence too.
But we want a better quarterback than Lawrence. I know. That's why we're going with Kyler.
Well, we would choose Kyler. I'm saying you could probably get Lawrence still too.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, I would take Lawrence. I don't know. I'm paying 105 for Lawrence though. I don't have that in me. Go get Herbert. He's falling into the second round in startup drafts, apparently.
Well, Rich, let me ask you this strategy question, because I think one of the things people would do on a team like this is you kind of laid out the outcome for a guy like Will Levis, where it could be a one and done. He finishes QB12, but he loses his job, right? You can see that range of outcome.
Sure.
But if you're going to make that bet, wouldn't you rather just say kind of punt QB2 on that team and just make sure you start Will Levis every week and make the bet and go try to trade those two firsts for, can I get Breece Hall and Jahmyr Gibbs for those two picks and Bryce Young? And just, you know how you capitalize on Will Levis? He better be in your lineup every week that he spikes. Because if he's on your bench and you're trying to rotate him in,
and to be fair, you might be able to get away with it with Anthony Richardson. You might, but also, you know, he could be.
It's very fragile, but it's funny. You look back at Sam Howell last year, he had like 9 QB one weeks in the first 13 weeks. His start rate on like safe leagues, which are just 12 teams start 10, his start rate in over half of those leagues was like 30% or less.
I bet, yeah.
Meaning people weren't recognizing those weeks.
They were
starting, you know, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert. They were starting those guys over him. And they weren't capturing those weeks. So it's almost like unrealized war. And then the guy loses his job and you're out. So it's almost like you need to align your bet on a guy like Levis to say, if I really think that's in his range of outcomes, he needs to just be my QB2.
But I do agree with you. I think the very first thing I'm trying to do with that team is sell Bryce Young. And like I said, you're going to have to put a carrot with him. You're going to have to put 105 with him. If you have 9-10. You're going to have to do that, but I think you can do that. I still think you can.
Would you take a 26 first just to stash it for later?
For Bryce Young? Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I think you can get that done in a lot of leagues. If you're willing to take the 26 and not trying to get a 10 or a 25 or a, a mid first this year, I think you can walk away. But that makes total sense to do that.
Yeah.
We we're about done here. We got 1,240 eyeballs in here. We don't necessarily need to bounce right this second, but Rich, what do you have going on? Yeah, we're close. what do you have going on, Reeves?
Well, we're closing in. We're a week out from the draft. I've actually been going through every offensive roster in the NFL and writing up everyone's kind of team needs. I mean, you know, obviously it's format as team needs, but what it does, it helps me, is it gives me kind of a launching pad. I kind of do more than just like the team needs. I kind of use it as a forum to go through literally every offensive roster and kind of break it down. So that's been kind of cool doing that. I got five teams left. They'll all be out by the end of this week. Those are all free articles too. Ray Summerlin does the defense for those teams. I'm glad I don't have to do both. But it's just waiting for next week, right? And enjoy the draft, adjust these dynasty ranks, you know, throw these guys in, kind of see what happens. It's the best time for this. Is like our like kind of Christmas for dynasty.
This right? is our Christmas. This 100%.
Is our thing, because it's where everything shapes up. It's not just getting to do the drafts afterwards, which everyone loves doing rookie drafts, but it's the shakeup that the draft provides, right? Like to the leagues, because this is probably going to be the most active 2-week stretch your league will have of the offseason. You know, especially you, a lot of those were, it's a mid activity league. Like, so those teams are all going to be active.
That's going to be high for these couple weeks. Right. It's all.
And that's, you know, and that just reinvigorates life. But also if you're a team that is on top of things and you wish your league was more active, you have to take advantage of that 2-week window. You've got to use that to your advantage. So it is fun, man. I'm excited to see where these guys go. And like you said, before the show, I haven't been on like, you know, Twitter arguing, trying to shout over people of like my favorite players in the draft or anything, but it's exciting to see all these that period end in the transition, because we don't have to deal with that anymore.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Well, do you want to, Shane, were you about to say something? Were you waving your hand or were you now?
I don't think I moved my hand at all. I don't think I moved my hand at all, but no, like I like Rich's point though, that it's not just a draft. I like watching people melt down because the asset they think they had that was elite is no longer elite because, I don't know, another wide receiver gets added to the room. So all of a sudden, the wide receiver that they thought was going to be elite, like Zay Flowers, they go, oh, wait a minute. They just added another wide receiver. I guess Zay Flowers isn't going to have 160 receptions in his second year. I guess he's not Antonio Brown. And I'm not picking on Zay Flowers. It's just an example.
Sure. Sure. Scott, were you about to? Scott has actually been the laggy one tonight. Did you guys notice that too?
Oh, it's been awful and I don't appreciate it at all. Get your internet corrected.
Yeah, I know. Do better. Do better next time. We got Rich Rebar on the show tonight.
I got it. Scott, hot take for being a Bengals fan. First round, what position are they taking?
Tackle.
It's like a weather person saying there's a chance of scattered storms in the summer in the afternoon. So you just guess tackle.
Tackle. Just
which way is somebody going?
Just say Brock Bowers. They're getting Brock Bowers. Go for the gusto.
Scott's sticking with that answer. He's just saying tackle. That's it.
Well, no, I mean, let's close it out with this. Remind everybody, check out the DD draft stream. If you haven't, sign up with Underdog. Promo code is DDD. We're going to be there every night. I'm going to be there Friday and Thursday night for 5 hours. Every player we're going to react to. We're going to do a bunch of giveaways.
Well, I'm cutting
you off. Thousands of dollars worth of stuff.
I'm cutting you off. I know you didn't want me to be on the draft stream, but Ray said you have to let me be on there. He specifically said it in front of witnesses that I'm allowed on there for the whole time. So stop trying to shut me out.
I'm trying to work on the schedule to get everybody, because we have a ton of people that want to show up and we don't want 12 people on the stream because there's not enough voices to go around. But tune in. We're going to be there Thursday night, Friday night. Cody is going to be there all day Saturday, breaking down every offensive player on the second day. And then third day, he's going to be there going through everybody. And then Sunday night, Ray and I will be on Destination Chill and we're going to do the same thing. We're going to probably go 4 or 5 hours on Destination Chill talking about every single player. So I would just tell everybody this: conviction and correlation should be the theme. Think two moves ahead before you react to where these prospects land. be thinking about if you have these picks now, don't wait until everybody knows what they're going to be. If you have the 110 in your league, don't wait until it's on the clock to go, oh, who wants to trade up for AD Mitchell when the rest of your league's like, man, I'm really not trading up for him. That's a dead zone of picks. Like, make the move today. Think the next step ahead. Don't be stuck and go, oh, on the clock, I don't know who to pick. So be thinking about that before we get here, because it's going to be here. You're going to be on your clock in your draft, and you have 2 hours to pick, and you're going to be stuck. So think about that.
For sure. All right. Well, we're going to, we're going to end this stream. Thank you to everyone who already hit the like, because I know that's the easiest way to help out our channel, or the heart, whatever you see in front of you. Appreciate that. Hey, Rich, thanks for coming on, bud.
Absolutely, guys. I appreciate it, man. This is awesome, man. This is easy.
Yeah. That extensive show sheet we sent you, right?
Yeah.
We don't do those sort of things. I'm going to end this stream. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.